You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Welcome to this week's episode. I love that you're here with me and that you get to join in this really fun conversation about queer kid stuff. So before we jump in, I just want to first thank several of you for reaching out about coaching support. And to remind the rest of you, I will be raising my rates January 2019. So if you have been looking for some support, or you've been looking for some ways to get unstuck around body trust and the stories you have about your body, about communication, about desire and libido, kind of breaking out of some of the cycling and the stuckness you've had in a relationship, or if you just really want to change your relationship with pleasure. I work at all of those yummy intersections, and I still have a few spots left in my coaching practice. You can head to dawnsarah.com, Sarah is S-E-R-R-A, and learn all about my coaching practice. There is a Work With Me page where you can learn more about coaching, and a little intake form if you get through the coaching page and decide it sounds like something you want to explore more. So please head there if you could use a little bit of support. We can do one or two sessions, or we can have an ongoing supportive relationship. It's totally up to you and what you need, and I would love to be that support. This week's episode is with Lindsay Amer, and you probably actually know Lindsay because Lindsay is the creator of the YouTube web series Queer Kid Stuff, and there have been some viral videos circling on all of the social media channels over the past couple of months because Lindsay's work is so rad. It's so sweet and so helpful, and there are these short, just couple minute little episodes with Lindsay, sometimes with guests and always with Teddy, the talking teddy bear, talking all about gender and sexuality and bullying. And though it is a kids' show, there's an awful lot in there that can help adults unpack their stories and their fears too. So let me tell you a little bit about Lindsay and then we will jump in. Patreon supporters, Lindsay told me that Steven Universe is one of their most favorite things to geek out about. I have only seen a handful of episodes of Steven Universe, so our Patreon bonus is Lindsay telling me why they think Steven Universe is so frickin' rad and what they get out of it and what their favorite stories are. So if you're a Steven Universe fan or you've heard lots of people talking about it and you don't know why everyone thinks it's so rad, totes check out the Patreon bonus. $3 a month and above gets you that weekly bonus content. You can go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal. You cannot search for us because despite me fighting back and forth with Patreon, they have deemed the show pornographic. And that means you have to actually like type the URL in. You can't search for Sex Gets Real once you get there. So patreon.com/sexgetsreal. Here is a little about Lindsay. Lindsay Amer is a queer activist, artist, and storyteller. They create and host Queer Kid Stuff, an LGBTQ+ educational web series for all ages. They obtained their BS from Northwestern University in Theater and Gender Studies, and their Master's from Queen Mary University of London for Theater and Performance Studies. They were named a Rising Star by GLAAD, they are a Webby Award honoree, and they've been recognized by HuffPost, Teen Vogue, Refinery29, and Kids Screen for their work. They also serve as co-founder and artistic associate of Blue Laces Theater Company, making multi-sensory theatrical experiences for people with autism and other developmental differences in New York. When they're not taking down the patriarchy, they're probably roaming around Brooklyn with their uke, their incredible partner, and their new puppy. You can click through to see Queer Kids Stuff in the show notes. I've got all the links for both Lindsay and Queer Kids Stuff, so that's nice and easy, or you can head to sexgetsreal.com. And I would love your questions. I've got several questions waiting for an episode coming up soon, but I would love to hear from you. Where are you feeling stuck? Where could you use more resources? Where are you feeling confused? What's not making sense when it comes to your body, to sex, to relationships, to hooking up, all of the things? Please go to sexgetsreal.com and use the send a note link where you can send in your questions. You can do it anonymously if you want to. I would love to hear from you. I'm going to have a few question answering episodes coming up, so send them my way. Here is my conversation with Lindsay. One other quick note. I am so sad about this, but it is what it is. My conversation with Lindsay is so great, and sadly, Lindsay's audio is not the best. It's a little bit garbled and staticky. You can definitely understand everything, but it's just got a little bit of a kind of raw edge to it. So please forgive the audio quality and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Lindsay, and our conversation about queer kid stuff today should be super fun. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. I found you, like I'm sure so many people have, in that lots of people are talking about your show these days. So many posts have been going viral, and you've been featured some really exciting places like Teen Vogue and on Dylan Marin's show. Mm-hmm. So how has it been for you to be getting all of this attention on a show called Queer Kid Stuff that you make?
It's pretty cool. I think when I originally started it about 2.5 years ago, I knew I was like starting like something that could get like pretty buzzy, mostly because things like this just don't exist and there's, you know, inherent controversy around it, which shouldn't exist, but does, unfortunately. And I think I've worked really hard to get a lot of the buzz that's been happening. It's cool that it's starting to like really gain some momentum, and that's been like kind of a culmination of a lot of things. So this is kind of like a really like exciting point to be at for me, of like having done all this work and it feels like it's finally kind of like at the tipping point where it's like really starting to pay off, and people are like it's getting kind of like in bigger circles, and yeah, it's been really cool to watch that happen.
Oh my God, I'm so excited because we desperately need stuff like this.
I think so too.
Yeah. So would you tell us a little bit about your story, kind of how you came into your understanding of your gender and your sexuality, and kind of like what brought you to here?
Yeah, totally. So I grew up in New York City, actually, you know, white, liberal, you know, relatively well-off family. I grew up with a lot of privilege, which I'm incredibly grateful for, and really try and pay back as much as I can. And the thing is about that is that I had like an untraditional family structure. Like I have step parents and lots of siblings, but everyone was like all very straight, and it was like okay to be gay for like other people, but it was never really like internalized for me of like, oh, that's something I could be too. So I like really struggled with coming out. I was like kind of out to like a few good friends in high school, but for the most part, I didn't come out until I was in college. And I had like a really tough time in high school, and like kind of struggled with that. And then college kind of took me a little bit, but eventually came out as gay. And then I went off to grad school, kind of like found myself while I was there for a year, came back to the States and kind of decided to make Queer Kid Stuff. And it just kind of happened from there. And in terms of like my gender coming out story, that's actually pretty new. I came out as non-binary, I think like almost a year ago. So that's definitely been like a pretty long journey. And, you know, I come from this background where I have a lot of privilege, and I come from like a liberal space. I come from New York, one of like the arguably one of the most liberal places, most diverse places you could grow up. And I still had a lot of trouble figuring this out. I only came out as non-binary a year ago. So I constantly am asking myself, like, if I had so many issues with this, like, I'm not the bottom line in this story, you know? Mm-hmm. And if there's someone who doesn't have even like the privileges that I have, like, what could they be going through? And I kind of make queer kid stuff for, you know, a young me, but also for in terms to like pay it back to those people who need it. And yeah, that's like a lot of, that's a lot of where it came from, of just like wanting this content to be out there, mm-hmm. You know, for people who, and like for the young me who wanted it.
A lot of people listening to the show are very familiar with genderqueer and non-binary, mm-hmm. and trans identities. But just in case there's someone listening who it's kind of new to, how do you describe non-binary gender to folks?
Yeah, the way that I like to talk about it is non-binary being in between or outside of boy and girl. That's kind of like the simple way I like to put it.
You did this interview with Teen Vogue, which, first of all, so exciting, because they are doing some amazing work in the world these days.
Yeah, they're really, the first time a Teen Vogue article came up about me, I hadn't like reached out to them at all. They, I guess, had like picked up an episode. I think it was, I want to say it was my consent episode that's like from forever ago. And I like was like every once in a while in like the earlier days, I would like Google queer kids stuff to just like see what the chatter was and to see if anyone had like picked it up or anything like that. And I found the Teen Vogue article and I was like, what? This happened. And it had like gone up like 2 months before then. And I was like, what? There's been a Teen Vogue article about me up for like 2 or 3 months that I didn't notice. My Google alert clearly wasn't working. And they've been really great. They covered a couple things as well. I did that interview with them. And yeah, they've been really supportive.
I get a fair number of questions on the show from people who are usually in their 40s and 50s and are just starting to really kind of question, mm-hmm. their sexuality or their gender. You know, maybe they've been married for 15 or 20 years, maybe they've got kids, mm-hmm. and they're just starting to kind of go, wait a minute, mm-hmm. maybe this weird feeling I've had my whole life is because I'm a different gender than I thought, or maybe I'm bisexual and I always thought that I was straight. And there's a lot of distress for adults, especially who are in somewhat more traditional situations, cities, you know, families, those kinds of things, to kind of start butting up against this. And something that you said in your Teen Vogue interview about gender was, my advice is to throw out the rule book. Wear what feels comfortable, do what you enjoy doing, follow your own happiness. Who cares what you should and shouldn't do? Gender is a construct. So for people who, you know, kids have kind of this beautiful position where they don't have history, they don't have baggage, mm-hmm. around what these words mean. Everything that they're getting around what these words do or don't mean is from adults, and adults tend to have lots of baggage and lots of feelings.
A lot.
So what would kind of be your advice to an adult who's starting to kind of ask themselves these questions and maybe finds it really uncomfortable or really scary, that you would want to just kind of like throw out there?
I'd say be patient with yourself. Mm. Talking to adults is very different from talking to kids, because of the like baggage. I don't know if I would call it baggage, but like, it's, we've constructed as adults the how we understand the world around us, how it works, mm-hmm. how it functions, how we perceive other people, how we predict other people to function, and all of the logic structures that make up the world we live in and how we live our lives. So that is all super solidified, especially by the time you're like 30s, 40s, 50s. And it's really hard to undo it. And that's a huge reason why I primarily work with kids, because I want to kind of help them build their own scaffolding. Whereas like, let's take this metaphor for a second. And, you know, you're talking about like a kid who like is just building the foundation of their identity house. So I can come in and I can help them dig that up and we can start building that structure from the ground up, from scratch. Whereas with a 30, 40, 50 year old, you've got a fully home decorated house. So when you're coming in at that point, you gotta invest time, you gotta invest money, you gotta invest a lot of emotions into doing a renovation, kind of. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of patience. So I would say, if you're having these feelings, if you are thinking that something's not right, if something's feels like it, there's that little like tingling feeling of like something just like isn't quite fitting here. If you're feeling that, be patient with yourself. Let yourself kind of go through that process of what is this? Where is this not fitting with my construction of the world? And where might I need to make an adjustment? And where can people in my life help me make that adjustment? And kind of what are all the steps in that? Because it's definitely like a thing. And yeah, be patient with yourself. That's the message there.
I really appreciate that. I think the patience can be really hard when we kind of start to, oh my God, what if I'm gay? You know, and then kind of you're off to the races and you're, you know, we're all so good at being super busy and thinking about all the things, past and present and future. And and I think that often when we're like, maybe I'm kinky, maybe I'm queer, maybe I'm whatever it is, you know, it can take up a lot of space. And so I think that patience is super important. And I also think just kind of like naming, we're allowed to change our minds and we can like try things on,
of course,
and see if they work for us. And, you know, I think that's something else that happens too. When we kind of tighten up and constrict, it can feel very all or nothing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say I am deliciously envious in the most supportive of ways that you got to be on Dylan Marin's Conversations with People.
Yeah.
Oh, Dylan is doing such amazing work in the world.
Yeah, Dylan's lovely.
So you had an opportunity to talk to someone who left a comment on some of your stuff, kind of who disagreed with talking to kids about queer stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of what that was like to really have a conversation with someone who had made it really clear that they don't think talking to kids about queer stuff is something that they agree with.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an exercise in patience, and it was pretty eye opening. I have to say, during the conversation, it was also a much longer conversation, and Dylan edited it down, so it feels a lot more intense to listen to than it actually like. It was definitely an intense conversation, but it was over a longer period of time. So it was, we were kind of able to like adjust and adapt like as the conversation was going and really kind of figure out where the other person was coming from, which is something that I've never really like sat down and like taken the time to do with someone who has like a differing opinion from me. I'm not like someone who really seeks out conflict in my everyday life, or especially conflict like that. That's the kind of thing that like I felt super comfortable with Dylan, and I really trusted him to be able to facilitate that conversation for me. And that was a huge, huge part of it. It was, I'm really glad I went through that experience just to kind of like hear where someone was coming from. And like it came down to like a very kind of philosophical ending of like how we view the world, and like how we view like how constructs are built and whether they can be shifted or not. And I mean, I hope I planted a seed in him, in the commenter I had of, you know, I'm a person too, and there are people who identify as non-binary in the world, and there are people who identify as trans in the world, and there are kids who out there who need to learn about different you know, people and diversity. And I hope I really like was able to kind of get that across. And I think I really listened to why he didn't get, why he like wasn't there. But yeah, it was a super interesting conversation.
It struck me that one of the ways that you describe queer kid stuff is gender studies 101 meets Mr. Rogers' mm-hmm. Neighborhood. And I literally just this past weekend watched the Mr. Rogers documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And what really struck me about so much of what they were saying was how at the time, you know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was very radical. And he was really taking a pretty political stance, but from a place of like love and reaching across the aisle and, you know, bringing people in who were Black and bringing people in who were mm-hmm. disabled and seeing you do something very similar from this place of love and acceptance and kindness, and then talking about drag and talking about asexuality and talking about bullying. So as someone who is doing something really radical, what's the response been?
The response to what in particular?
To just queer kid stuff and what you're putting out into the world.
Oh, what like the response is from the world?
Yeah.
it is, it's definitely pretty black and white, I would say, or for the most part, at least of like what I hear, people are either like super on board, really are into it, are messaging me about their like gender creative kids and like how they're using it in their classrooms and all this like really cool stuff. And like, those are the people who are totally on board with me, are like getting it and like getting the message and like understand why it's important. And then like the polar opposite is like, this is like child abuse. This is indoctrination. This is detriment to society, like people who just really do not see eye to eye with like what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. People who think that I'm trying to like teach kids about sex and like teach things that are inappropriate in their eyes to kids. And yeah, so those are kind of like the two ends mm-hmm. ends of the response that I get.
Has there been an episode that you've had that either got an overwhelmingly like, holy shit, this is the best ever response, or a really big kind of knee jerk, like, oh my God, this is literally Satan work? I mean, has there been a particular yeah. episode that's just like really, really fucked people up?
Yeah, I'd say the two episodes that like really got people just like hit a nerve were super surprising too. Well, the first one was T is for Trans, so kind of like explaining what trans identity is to kids, and that was like the tail end of the first season, and that was like one of the first ones that got like people really up in arms. Mm-hmm. And then in my second season, I did an episode with a drag queen mm-hmm. for Pride, and people flipped their shit about that episode. And which is so surprising to me. It was a bearded drag queen, so I was like kind of trying to play with gender a little bit and show kids that like you don't just have to be super high femme to be a drag queen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, people were not happy about that. There was like a thing, there was like a meme that went around about it. I think it was on the front page of Reddit at one point. And this is like really intense. Yeah. But I think like one of the people who like made the meme that was going around that was like super violent and awful, was someone who marched at Charlottesville. Okay. So yeah, the like Nazis are definitely on my tail sometimes. But yeah, so that one definitely got a little intense. And like the very first episode, the very first wave of kind of like internet harassment that I got was on the very first episode, the like pilot that like I like can't watch it now. It's like such bad quality, but it exists on the internet. It got like written up on a Nazi publication, and I got like this huge wave of Nazis, and it was, and I'm Jewish, and that was interesting. But yeah, so I've definitely gotten, I'd say those are like the three that are most like, to like stick out in my memory. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty good at ignoring it at this point though.
Yeah. And what about for you? What conversations have felt the most nourishing that you've been the most proud of?
Oh, that's a great question. I think since I've like gotten better at ignoring the kind of like backlash of it, I've like in turn gotten better at kind of trying to connect with my community around it. So I get, you know, emails and I get some, like Facebook messages sometimes from parents who watch what I'm doing. And like, I love getting messages about like people who've like shown this to their kid. I've like been doing t-shirts and stuff recently. And like, I got an Instagram message of like a kid in like the Cricut Stuff shirt. And that was amazing. I don't know if there's like anything in particular that I guess the consent episode had some like really good feedback, particularly because it was like right around when Me Too was happening. Mm. I guess it was like a little bit before a lot of stuff started breaking, but it felt super, super relevant. And that's something that I was like really proud of. And I think that episode just like turned out really well also. And yeah, I think that's just like an episode that's continued to stay relevant. And I'm like, hey, if any of your like adult friends need a lesson on consent, watch this video, please.
It works for everyone.
It does. It does. The secret of queer kid stuff is that it's not for kids.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the beautiful things about the show is how much permission you're giving to adults to be able to then share content and ask questions with young people and share their own mm-hmm. stories with young people. And it's really powerful.
Exactly. And I think that's where my theater background comes in a lot, too, of like not wanting to talk down about these topics and like making it entertaining and clearly it's for kids. But really what I'm doing is simplifying mm-hmm. and kind of like taking out like all of that like adult baggage away from these topics and just getting to kind of like the core of what these issues are and saying, hey, anyone can understand this. Really what it boils down to is gender most of the time, honestly. And if we can kind of pull that apart and make that accessible for kids, we can make that accessible for anyone.
Let's talk birth control. We've got an exciting new sponsor that's doing something totally revolutionary with birth control access in the U.S. They're called Simple Health, and they're starting out by simplifying birth control access with online prescriptions and home delivery. Did you know over 20 million women and who knows how many trans and non-binary folks in America lack reasonable access to something as basic and fundamental as contraception? It's safe to say that obviously, the existing healthcare system in America can prevent people from getting the care that they need, especially under this administration, whether it's insurance barriers, income, location. So Simple Health thought of a better way. With Simple Health, you can get your birth control prescribed online and delivered to your door for free. It's affordable, convenient, and safe. And whether you're already on birth control, looking to get back on it, or want to try it for the first time, Simple Health can help. And just a note, if you can get erectile dysfunction meds online, why should birth control be any different? So here's how it works. You fill out a comprehensive online health profile and answer some questions formulated to get the best birth control for you. Your body, your preferences, your insurance situation, they take it all into account. Then a medical doctor reviews your profile to figure out if you're a good candidate for birth control, recommends a product, and then they write a prescription. And then your birth control just ships right to your door on a recurring schedule, no interruptions. And just to be clear, Simple Health isn't making their own birth control or anything like that. They only prescribe trusted and vetted brands of birth control, including pills, the patch, a ring. If you're already on birth control and just tired of going to the pharmacy, this is even easier because you just fill in your pharmacy and insurance information and then they start shipping your birth control to you for free. And best of all, Simple Health offers affordable care regardless of insurance. They do accept insurance, and luckily, with most insurance plans, birth control is free. But for those without insurance, which is a growing number of folks, the average cost is about $18 a month, depending on the exact type that's prescribed. And then, of course, the delivery is free for everyone. Now, the prescription is usually $20, but listeners, woohoo, you get to try it for free. All you have to do is go to simplehealth.com/SGR for Sex Gets Real, SGR, or enter code SGR at checkout. You can do either one of those, and then that gets you the doctor consult and prescription, which is normally $20, for free. And I also just want to mention that this isn't a replacement for routine evaluations by your primary care or a gynecologist, but it is a super convenient and comfortable way to get your birth control. And remember that there are some studies that show birth control failure rates are higher for folks in fat bodies. So if you are in a fat body, just make sure you do a little bit of research, you ask good questions, and then decide what works for you. Again, don't miss this chance to try birth control contraception to your door. Go to simplehealth.com/SGR or enter code SGR at checkout. Stock up, especially under this administration. So for people who are listening that do have young kids in their life and they aren't sure how to initiate conversations about things like gender or sex, what is your hope for them in the ways that they can initiate those conversations, or even like tips or suggestions that would make it just a little bit easier than kind of like, now we're going to have the gender talk?
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, if you're scared to like have a conversation yourself, have your kids watch my videos. Watch the videos with your kids. Like, there's so many different ways to engage with this material. And if you want to watch it yourself and then like have the conversation and feel like you have more knowledge and like the language to be able to do it, you can do that too. It's really not that scary. Honestly, not talking about it is more damaging. Yeah. Because kids are going to be curious and they're going to figure something out about it anyways. And wouldn't you rather have control over that conversation? Wouldn't you rather be able to kind of couch that in a space that's positive and affirms them and who they are and who they could be, rather than, you know, hearing from their like friend in the courtyard of like, oh my God, he's so gay. And it's like, that's not the space where you want them to hear the word gay for the first time as like potentially a slur. And if you can kind of like going back to that metaphor I had about like a house, like if you can build that foundation with them, first of all, it like strengthens your bond with them and like being able to have difficult conversations and not being scared of that. And like, you know, opening it up for them in the future to feel comfortable going to you if they're having questions about their identity. And that is a huge part of laying that foundation. And you're also just like letting them be themselves. And if they have a positive association with something they could be, then, you know, there's so many issues with, you know, mental health and LGBT youth. And this is like really a huge way to combat that. And it's as simple as having a conversation.
The laying the foundation around the conversation is such great advice. And I love that metaphor. And I think that metaphor really works for so many types of conversations in our lives, mm-hmm. whether we're talking to kids for the first time about gender and consent and bodies, or we're just entering into a relationship for the first time, being able to, it's so much easier to enter into relationships with other adults where the foundation is one of curiosity and open conversation and letting space for like awkwardness and I'm not really sure mm-hmm. what to say, than to try and initiate those conversations 5 or 10 years into a relationship when now you've got this whole house, and to ask some of these questions might shake the foundation a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. When I grew up, there was definitely nothing about queerness or gayness. You know, like Will and Grace was yeah. kind of a thing when I was in high school, or maybe mm-hmm. even college. I don't remember. And, you know, now we've got kids who are coming up in a world where their pop culture is talking about gender and showing a variety of ways to be. And there's YouTube full of incredible people making content like yourself. When mm-hmm. you think about like 4 and 5 year olds today mm-hmm. growing up and being adults, what is kind of your hope for the future of queerness and gender and the ways that people experience it? You know, moving beyond oppression, where do we end up?
I just want people to feel comfortable being themselves out in the world. And, you know, not having to like wait so long to come out and like figure that out. Like if I, like what would my life have looked like, especially like when I was a teenager, even in my like earlier in my 20s, like if I had come out as queer and non-binary and like figured that out when I was a little kid, like what would my life look like? And that, and like what would have, like that struggle I went through when I was a teenager and in high school and having a really hard time, like would I have had those same struggles? Like I don't know. I think a lot of like queer people go through this thing where because a lot of people, especially a lot of people that I know, like might come out later in life in like college in their 20s, feel like they are like back like as teenagers, you know, when they're like in their 20s and they like kind of have to go through like not like a puberty or anything, but like figuring out how to have relationships. And it's definitely like it's lost time, you know, of not being your true self. So I wonder what that world would look like where people feel more comfortable just being themselves from the get-go and being able to like have that this like time of exploration that, you know, your childhood is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And it's not just supposed to be that for straight white kids, you know?
Right. Yeah, if we were able to grow up in a world that had less bullying mm-hmm. and less violence, so that whether we were, you know, fitting in with kind of traditional gender roles or not, to have the people around us just be like, oh, cool, that's who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, no distress there. Let's figure out if we like each other based on other things, but it has no bearing mm-hmm. on like your identity and how you show up in the world. That feels so much, it feels like there's so much more potential to actually be able to connect with people based on beliefs and values and desires rather than mm-hmm. I'm just clustering with the folks who don't harm me.
Yeah. And like, and also just like being successful, like in whatever ways you might, you know, categorize that, yeah. But like, you know, there's like a crazy amount, like percent of the wealth in America that's like, you know, held by straight cis men. And like, what would it be if like we were able to like pursue ourselves and like our passions and be able to like bring ourselves fully to that? Like, I think, honestly, I think it's like an economic thing as well.
Yes. Yeah, because it's not just our personal relationships, you know, it's like not just the people we're having sex with, it's not just the people that we're cohabitating with or whatever kind of relationship structure we have, but you're right. It's like, mm-hmm. who's creating the media? Who's winning the awards? Who's creating the companies? And how much of ourselves are we hiding or code switching mm-hmm. because we can't show up fully? And then like, what a loss for us collectively mm-hmm. when people are spending so much time and energy hiding parts of themselves. You know, what innovations and what kinds of connections are we losing?
Yeah, because I mean, I think diversity is twofold of like, you know, up at the top, you need to be seeking out those who are from like marginalized identities. Like if you're, you know, making a blockbuster film, like we need more like POC directors, POC, like people just like, you know, in film crews and like on camera, things like that. But like, I don't know. I have a friend who was like working on a project and really wanted a woman of color to direct the web series, and she just couldn't find someone because there are so few, and that has so much to do with accessibility and with economic status and racism and systemic racism and all that. And the same obviously goes for queer people. And, you know, just not being able to find, especially, you know, queer people of color. And it's twofold. It's up at the top and it's down at the bottom, you know, and it's a question of like global happiness, you know, and like, how do we get people into these spaces where they feel like they have the ability to pursue what they want to pursue? And like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm talking myself in circles, but like I have this like utopic ideal. And yeah. I think that kids are the way to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much. I mean, I feel like the violence and the trauma is more visible than ever, but mm-hmm. there's also so many more resources available, not only for kids, but for the adults that are in kids' lives to be able to support them in different ways than it has ever really been available. And I think that that's really hopeful.
Yeah, and I think something that I was like looking at a lot when I first started Queer Kids Stuff was that the things that did exist around very young kids and like queerness and social justice, the things that did exist were like parent and like teacher guides of like how to talk to kids. And that puts so much pressure on the adult, especially like someone who hasn't had that lived experience. And I think something that like I'm really trying to do is take that burden off of adults to be able to like have a tool mm-hmm. to use with young people. And that makes it so much less scary. And it's about like mitigating like that process of like, how do we get this information to kids because they need it. And I think that was a big thing trying to do what I'm doing in the way that I'm doing it particularly.
So on Queer Kid Stuff, for anybody who hasn't seen it, please go check it out. The videos are adorable and wonderful. And just like side note, your mom is so talented. The song that you did on Mother's Day, so cute.
Oh, thanks. I'll let her know.
Yeah. So you've talked about binaries and what the gender binary means and drag queens and trans and intersex, and you've been teaching kids who watch to ask people for their pronouns and to not talk about bodies, and you've gone so many incredible places. And I wonder, where do you want to go next, like in future seasons? What are conversations you either haven't had yet or conversations you want to revisit in new ways? Like, what's on the horizon?
Yeah, so I'm going to be dropping a fourth season of videos. We just had a fully funded Kickstarter, which was great, that I'm using to pay my crew for that. Let me actually just like really quickly pull up the episodes that I'm doing that season, just to remind myself. Yeah. But I'm actually putting up a mini series of episodes to hold everyone over until January when season 4 comes out. And that's going to be specifically for grown-ups. So I'm doing just a couple topics that I wanted to touch on because my stuff is so geared towards kids, but like the people who really are watching are like, it's what I've found is that like a lot of classrooms use my work and adults will like watch it with their kids, like during like family time, or it does tend to be like a like adult and child activity. Mm-hmm. I mean, I obviously don't hear from the kids who are like watching it by themselves, because they don't have access to like communication tools to talk to me. but yeah, so I wanted to kind of, you know, get in front of the adults and talk to them about like how best to use Queer Kid Stuff at home. I have a couple like tips that I'm going to do in one episode. We're going to meet a queer kid, which is going to be really fun. I'm talking about like parenting a little bit, which is going to be interesting, and I'm going to see how that goes over, because that's dangerous territory sometimes. But I mostly just want to start that conversation and kind of get adults to like maybe trust me a little bit more and like include them in the conversation. So that's something I'm looking at for this like early part of the next season. And then I'm really just kind of like working on expanding because we've basically covered all of the science for the most part. We've covered pretty much all the foundational queer stuff you need to understand to be able to get to a new place. So I want to talk about a little bit more about like diversity and what that means and kind of different aspects of queerness. I'm going to do an episode on immigration and I'm working on a potentially a Spanish vocabulary episode. So like moving into those spaces and you know, being politically relevant. And I think that that's important to like be reacting to what's going on in our world as well. And there's only so much you can do in like a kid's show to undermine that. Like you brought up the Mr. Rogers documentary before, and there's this great segment where they talk about how there was like a law that was going on at the time where there were segregated public pools, and Mr. Rogers did an episode where he had the black mailman come into his like backyard and share like a little foot bath with him in his little kiddie pool. And it's so small, especially like looking back on that, like not having the context, like you watch that and it's evergreen. Like it's not something that's really like directly didactically, like talking about that political moment, but that is so in your face, like radical that he was doing that at the time. And that's kind of like the kind of activism that I'm interested in, is this like very subtle subversion that's kind of getting into kids' brains. Like maybe you're hearing a little bit about those like whispers about current events that are probably going on in your house, but this is what I'm talking about. This is how I'm reaffirming that no, don't listen to what the grown-ups are doing. Oh, listen to this. I'm also going to redo the bisexuality episode. That's been a long time coming. That first episode that I did is a little bit of the definition I have is a little too binary. And that's a result of, you know, when I was first starting the show and not doing quite as much research as I should have been doing. And that was my fault. And I haven't taken it down because I don't want to like erase that representation, but we're going to reboot that. This next season, I'm looking at autism and queerness because there are a lot of kids with autism and it's super connected to queerness. I'm actually really excited about that episode. I want to talk about transitioning and what that is, because that's something that like trans kids are going through.
Yeah.
And people who might have young kids who might have parents who are transitioning. I also want to talk about adoption. I've actually had that as a request like a lot. And I'm curious about, I've been wanting to do a religion episode for a long time. So I'm trying to get the guests together to do that one.
Wow.
But yeah, your listeners just got like a pretty good sneak peek at the next season. And I think as far as I know right now, I'm going to do season 4 and then I'm planning on a season 5. No idea what I'm going to do in season 5. But I think that that's probably going to be the end.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know how much more I can pull out of my ass. and it's you know, it's meant to kind of live there. Pretty much all the episodes are evergreen, can just kind of be watched whenever. Quality of them obviously gets better and better with each season, as we have a little bit more of change and we get better at just doing it, me and my crew. But yeah, I just don't know how much more I can like do after that. There's only so much you could kind of cover. But yeah, kind of like seeing where that goes. If you know, I feel like we haven't covered enough after season 5, like totally happy to do a season 6. But I don't feel like I'm going to quite have enough content to do that. And then after that, I'm right now a big part of, I actually just turned freelance, which is very exciting.
Ooh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm doing this a little bit more, not quite full time, but like a little bit more part time freelance. And I'm really working hard on trying to expand queer kids stuff into kind of different modes, and like pitching places and doing kind of cool things in like other sectors. So keeping this like ethos of queer all ages media and kind of trying to spin it into like whatever else it can be. So I'm really excited about those possibilities, and there are definitely a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. I think what's so important is that there just isn't a lot out there. You know, there's definitely over the past like decade been some great growth around kids books and diversity, you know, with Flamingo Rampant and some of the other publishers picking up on things. You know, I feel like Entango Makes Three was one of the very first ones, and so many other kids books have come out since then. But, you know, we've got a couple of animated cartoons that are out there that have some cool queer representation, not enough, and then some YouTubers. So I love that you're thinking, what can I do beyond this YouTube channel? Because we need so much more.
Yeah, we really do. And it's, yeah, the growth has been enormous, and I've loved kind of like watching that. And I'm kind of like, okay, like this is getting somewhere, but like how can I situate myself so that in like 5 years time, when like 5 or so years, I think 5 years, that's my goal. Of like, where can I be where I can move this forward? Mm-hmm. And that's what excites me. Cause the wave is gathering. It definitely is. It's just, it hasn't quite reached where it needs to be yet. In terms of just like general representation in kids media. And I think there's a lot of stuff, especially in books, where it's been like growing pretty rapidly. And that's kind of like, because I think you have a lot more freedom in book publishing, because I actually don't know why. but yeah, I've got this like giant stack of picture books in my office, and there's so many like queer options. That are actually like really, some of them suck, but like some of them are really, really good. And it's cool to see even the diversity of quality. I mean, I think that that's a big thing in television right now, is that like there's a lot more of it, but like some of it's bad and some of it's good, you know, and like we would like it all to be good. But, you know, the fact that there's enough of it for some of it to be good and some of it to be bad is something to be, is like a kind of an achievement, weirdly. Yeah, just the quantity is pretty, it's getting there. It's not quite there yet. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have one last question for you before we wrap up and then go record a little Patreon bonus chat. And that is, your bullying episode, I think, is so important for so many reasons. You know, one, we know bullying happens for so many different kids and so many different bodies and identities. You know, and growing up, often bullying is a way to either deflect pain off yourself or to feel like you belong. And so having those conversations, you know, throughout kids' lives is super important. And I think also it's important for adults to think about. Like, I think adults engage in bullying online all the time without realizing that they're being bullies. I think it's kind of like, I'm just expressing myself. Mm-hmm. So what was it like for you to, one, like, take on the topic of bullying? And what do you want adults to really think about when it comes to bullying?
Yeah, I think that episode was one I kind of held off on for a long time. I talked about homophobia in, I think, the first season. But yeah, bullying didn't come around until about season 3, I think. And it's one that had been requested for a long time as well. Something I try and do on the show, and the way I kind of like categorize my activism, is through joy. And this kind of like positivity, and those conversations, those more serious conversations, don't obviously fit into that space. I would love to not have to do that episode, but unfortunately I do, because of the world we live in. So it's definitely an interesting question just because I like wish that episode didn't have to exist, and yet it really, really does. Mm-hmm. Because I need kids to know that this like message that I'm trying to get across of you are enough, and you can be who you are does have kind of like a catch to it sometimes. And I want young people to know that like I acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you do need to kind of be aware of if you're, you know, trying to live truthfully. And that's kind of like the unfortunate truth of it, and to kind of prepare yourself for it.
Yeah.
And not let the haters get to you. As cliche as that is. But yeah, I think, and I do those episodes pretty infrequently, because I do want the message to be this like positivity, and I don't want kids to be scared, to be themselves because of these realities.
Yeah.
But I think it's just kind of like, okay, we've gone through all this like awesome stuff yet, these like possibilities, these different ways of being, just like FYI, like this thing might could happen to you. And if it does, you got to talk to a grown-up about it. Mm-hmm. And because we've already like kind of built the trust in the series of, you know, I'm obviously like an adult in this kind of like setting that I've created, who can hopefully be trusted, and hoping that the episodes and like if kids are watching them with adults, that space can build trust, as well.
Yeah.
So it's a hard thing to talk about. And I did that bullying episode in kind of like the same hand as a school safety episode after the Parkland shooting happened. And those were two episodes that I felt were really important at the time to react to what kids are kind of going through on a day-to-day basis. And it's hard to acknowledge that and really recognize that reality. But those are real emotions that are happening in children's lives.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that they feel heard in that as well.
Yeah. And I think it's just important too for like adults to know that it's okay to not get it right. It's okay to do it. And, you know, I mean, like these conversations have to happen continually.
Oh yeah.
And it's not like you just like have one conversation about bullying or about queer issues or about sex and it's over. It's an ongoing dialogue. And mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's so beautiful about what you're offering is like the sooner you start that dialogue, the easier and the more natural it becomes a part of your relationship. And so it doesn't become this like huge cliff you feel like you have to jump off of in order to have this kind of like scary and uncomfortable conversation, because it's not easy to talk about bullying even if you've got all these resources.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the same with queer stuff, you know, especially if you're straight and you're trying to talk to your kid about an experience that you've never had before. Mm-hmm. You know, the conversations can be uncomfortable, but that's a good thing. Modeling that is a good thing. We need kids to see us kind of struggle and still do things anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So for people who want to stay in touch, find you online, check out Queer Kids Stuff, where should they head?
Yeah, so it's at Queer Kids Stuff, just one S, one Queer Kid Stuff. Really wrong if it's Queer Kids Stuff. I get that a lot. So that's where you can find me. Twitter, Facebook, Queer Kids Stuff is on all the places. I'm Linz Amer, LINBZAMER. That's my handle. And you can also find us at queerkidsstuff.com. We're Queer Kids Stuff on YouTube. It's pretty easy to find.
Awesome. Well, I will have links to all the things. And folks who are listening, be sure you subscribe to the channel so that you can get notifications when new videos come out. So you can click in the show notes or head to sexgetsreal.com to find all the information. Of course, you can also head there to send me a note if you've got any questions or stories that you want to share. Lindsay, thank you so much for being here with us and telling us all about the amazing work that you're doing out in the world. I'm so excited that you're sharing yourself this way.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you're so welcome. To everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for listening. If you support the show at $3 and above each month, you get weekly bonus content that you can't hear anywhere else. So head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal. Lindsay and I are going to go record a little bonus chat for you over there. And until next time, I'm Dawn Sarah. Bye.
Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the Vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?